Aloha, and welcome to Global Family Live. I'm your host, Kay Snow Davis, and we have a very special guest with us today, John Renesch. So right now, I want you to just take a breath. No matter where you are or what your life feels like right now, this hour is for you. So relax and take a deep breath and just breathe in aliveness. And let your breath out and let go of the stress of this day, the stress of your thinking. Now breathe in love and release your breath in gratitude. So how's your week been? We do seem to be on the jet stream in life right now. So many things are happening so fast, so much life is going by so quickly. So have you noticed that it's more and more challenging to remember many things? Sometimes it's even people's names that you've known for years. Sometimes it's, where are my keys? Sometimes it's, oh my goodness, this detail just dropped through the crack. Well, I want you to know that you're not alone. This is a really common theme right now, and it's not age-related. So just relax and know this is part of this amazing change that's going on in the consciousness paradigm shift. As we shift in consciousness, the constructs of our conscious mind must become more pliable, more flexible, more resilient, and more receptive. We have to make room, literally, in our thinking, room in our hearts, room in our lives, for a new way of living, or there never will be one. Now take the example of our birth. When we outgrew the womb and the divine timing said, you're out of here, that's what has to happen. And there's that birth canal that feels a little bit too small and too tight. But the eventuality is the release into a whole new reality, a whole new world. So right now we're doing that very same thing. And we're doing it in consciousness. So sometimes if your life just feels too tight, too constricted, too limited, and you just feel trapped, breathe. Just breathe and take yourself through that moment. Because the breath is the movement of life. It will keep us going no matter what. And the more you consciously breathe, the more you reduce the stress in your body. This is so important. I feel so privileged to be able to bring to you on this show, Global Family Live, our very special guest who has a deep, deep commitment to just what we're talking about, a new paradigm in living on so many levels. So we've kind of channeled it down here. And tonight, John and I want to talk about a new paradigm in leadership. Now, John is a San Francisco-based businessman who turned futurist. That's pretty amazing because the constructs of business and the constructs of academia are really designed to hold us tight in the belief system. So you can get a sense already who John is, and he's published dozens of books, many articles focused on organization and social transformation, inspired by his passion. As a veteran businessman for over 3 decades in a variety of businesses and leadership positions, he's also spent these years exploring the field of human consciousness and potentiality. Now, since 1990, John has been writing about the tremendous possibility for marrying business and consciousness. Don't you love that? Marrying business and consciousness to achieve a better future for our world, for our children. Now, in John's latest book, entitled Getting to the Better Future, A Matter of Conscious Choosing, he contends that the business community has a huge opportunity to lead the way in a historic global transformation of consciousness. This is so exciting to have people in business who are actually thinking this, and John is networking this. Now, if you'd like to participate and get John's news, he has a lovely newsletter that comes out monthly, and it's called Future Shapers, and you can get that from his website, www.renesh, let me spell that for you, R-E-N, as in Nelly, ESCH.com. Now, here's the real person. Welcome, John.
Hi, Kay.
How are you?
I'm fine. Nice to be with you. Nice to hear your the first part of the show there. That was very nice.
Thank you, John. And I want our audience to know that it's been several years that John and I connected in, I think it was in Marin, in the Bay Area, and it's been fun to just see the movement that we're each making, John. And, of course, at that time, I had no idea I'd be living back on the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
But here I am in California, and here you are in California.
The same time zone.
The same time zone. So, John, I know from knowing you these number of years that you've been seated deeply in your heart and soul with an awareness that you have of how we can actually live differently and still do what we call business and do life. So I'd love to have you fill the audience and me in on some of your focuses and some of your intentions on how you're growing that as a reality, because I know that's what's happening. You're growing it as a reality. It's not just a concept in your world.
Right. Well, back when I first decided to take on this issue, which was, I mean, when I say I was a businessman, I was a businessman for many years, but never anything on the scale of a huge public company. Nobody would have heard of any of the businesses I started. But when I started this, I kind of took it on as we've got to get things to change. We've got to get things to be different.
Uh-huh.
It was with kind of a missionary zeal and attitude. And over the years, as I've grown spiritually and consciously, and as I've mellowed in my work, I'd say my if you want to call it a strategy, is instead of trying to make something happen that doesn't want to happen, I'm standing here as a midwife
uh-huh.
to that. I loved your metaphor at the beginning of the show, the birth canal,
uh-huh.
because we are in the midst of a paradigm change, and you're not going to force it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the medical community does force births, but
that's true.
I see it more as a midwifing process
uh-huh.
where you're standing by and you give a nudge here and a nudge there and a squeeze here and a squeeze there and a smile here and a smile there and encourage it and stand by to be of help anywhere you can.
Uh-huh.
And my way of helping is largely through writing and speaking about it. Because what I find in speaking, because writing is kind of isolated, you don't really know what people, how they respond to what you write.
Right.
But in speaking, you get people come up after my talks, and they'll make comments. And the most frequent comment I get is, I'm so glad to hear somebody like you, and I guess that means you up in front of the room,
mm-hmm.
talking this out loud.
Uh-huh.
Because I've had these thoughts in my head for months, years, days, weeks, etc. So people are feeling like they're validated in their concerns, in the issues that they're bringing forth, in the visions that they have for the kind of future we could be having, knowing that this is not it, that there is something beyond being overly busy, like you pointed out, or stressed out, working our little tails off to pay off all the debt we have,
mm-hmm.
which is what most people have kind of gotten caught up in.
Right.
So to a large degree, especially the work community, and almost who doesn't work these days, it's
That's
become
true.
Kind of a cycle of working for the system, forgetting that we've created the system, and we are now becoming enslaved by it, as opposed to recognizing that the legitimacy that we give the system is the only reason it has power over us, and that we can take back that power and start coming from a vision of what's possible rather than a way of coping with the dysfunctionalities of the various systems that we are engaged in.
Well, and John, you know, I love people telling you that you are the voice for their thoughts.
Well, I wouldn't say the voice, because there's lots of us doing this, but...
Well, in that moment, you were a voice for
them.
Yes,
I was a voice, and it's what actually feeds me and keeps me going, too, because there are times when... I wouldn't say I ever get discouraged, but I feel some despair from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
When certain things are happening in the world that seem like things are going exactly the opposite way. But that's kind of an occupational hazard for me.
Yes.
Little bouts of despair, and because I've learned to feel them when they're there and not try to avoid them, they thankfully pass very quickly.
Well, and, you know, John, the part that with someone giving you a reflection after you've spoken, that it really, I think, refers to exactly what we've chosen as our theme for today, is a new paradigm in leadership, because I feel in my heart that this 6.5 billion people on this planet, the highest majority have goodness in their heart, and they are good people with a common desire to live safely and peacefully and feel love and be loving and be with their families. And the conditions that are perpetuated in the media that are so horrific and so terrorizing take away that awareness that there is a place of safety and that we can create that, exactly what you were saying, John, our agreement to be in dysfunction and be controlled by systems that are so, so unhealthy. And the part I'm noticing, John, in America is we are so bereft of powerful, clear leadership who are expressing their devotion to life versus terrorizing. And I think this is such a key piece, and I'm extremely concerned for our young men in this country, because where are their heroes? Where are their models? And this is so important, in my opinion, what you're doing, John, because I believe we've got brilliant young people, and they have their own gifts, and we learn by modeling. We're indigenous beings at very deep levels, and we learn by modeling. So I'm in such gratitude, John, for your devotion and all of the places that you go through to bring to the business world, to bring to your social world, to bring to life the gifts that you're bringing. I really appreciate what you're doing, John.
Thank you, Kay. Yeah, the leadership crisis that I've been writing about it, I guess, for 13, 14 years now. And it's becoming clearer and clearer to me each year that it is not, we don't need any more leadership workshops on how to lead. An individual may want to go to one, that's fine. But this corporate spending of workshops to convert managers into leaders, and with the idea that these people are going to turn into what we would call a real leader, not just a more learned manager. And some recent research that I've come across that hasn't been published yet, two consultants have found it out, is that of 450 managers and leaders in organizations that they interviewed who had aspirations for leading in the in the genre of a Churchill or Mother Teresa or Nelson Mandela, but they were not doing it. They were not practicing it. And so they interviewed them, and they found all the attributes of leadership they admired, and then they said, well, why aren't you doing this? What are you doing? And they, to a person, on a one-on-one basis, they agreed, they confided, that they were basically conforming to what the system seemed to be asking them to do. So that, which is not what I consider leadership.
Exactly.
It's being politically savvy, making sure you don't get in trouble, playing it safe. And all these leaders that they cite and that they admire never played it safe. They came from a passion for correcting some wrong or making something, creating something out of nothing that the world could use. So,
you know, that is so real, John. Reverend Michael Beckwith at Agape on Sunday was speaking to that very thing that you're talking about and reminding people that, you know, the world wasn't, and many, many people were not necessarily excited about Gandhi's viewpoint or Martin Luther King. But they didn't do it to create excitement about that. They did it to create a movement of change.
Leaders that I admire never were trying to be popular.
No.
In fact, they went through a phase, most of them, where they were very unpopular.
Yes.
But they were speaking what some people like to say is their truth. But they were speaking about something that they felt passionate about, passionate enough to risk not being liked, passionate enough to risk being made fun of or ridiculed. But if your role in life is to stay under the radar and play it safe and not have criticism, then you're just one of the herd.
And John, in all the years now that you've really, you know, been viewing this and focusing on this, what do you think would make the difference to support the people who seem to have the passion or the visions? What do you think would help make the difference so their leadership could emerge and be effective in the way that their heart desires?
Well, I see two factors. And I don't mean to say I completely subscribe to the only way change happens is either through pain or pleasure, but that seems fairly useful right now.
Uh-huh.
The pain that people are feeling is there's a growing discontent with the way things are. And I don't mean just politically or systemically or organizationally, but there's a growing awareness that this is not the end game. That the new car doesn't make you happy, that the new house doesn't make you happy. Putting the kids through Harvard instead of the local community college doesn't necessarily make you happy. So there is a growing, I'll call it a pain,
mm-hmm.
or dissatisfaction or discontent,
mm-hmm.
Being in debt so heavily and being working so hard and not having time for your children and all these sorts of things. But there's the other piece is that some more people, and in some cases different people, in some cases the same, as they grow and expand and read and acquire more consciousness, they start seeing that there's something better available, that this isn't all there is. So we don't have to be settle in here and take consolations in order to cope with life. That there is something beyond that. So I see both of those forces coming into play. And the more what I choose to focus on, instead of pointing to all the dysfunctions and all the problems in the world, is I try to look at what we could possibly create. What kind of a world do we want? And if you interview most people, and I haven't done big research on this, but on a one-on-one basis, anecdotally, most everybody knows that this is not the end evolution of humanity, that we have a long ways to go. A colleague of mine, and I've done this as well myself, he speaks all over the world, I've spoken all over the world, not in the same audiences, and each of us has taken straw polls of the audience at different times during our talks, not all talks, but some, asking the audience where they think humanity is in the evolution of child, young adult, or adolescent, young adult, and mature adult. And inevitably, the most hands up that are raised up come out of adolescence.
Uh-huh.
Some even are saying we're still in the child phase.
Now, is that even internationally, John?
Pardon?
The international audiences also feel that?
Yes.
Wow, that's very interesting.
And that's not trying to set them up. I just ask them, where do you think we are? And the same thing that Duane Elgin is the other person that I've talked to about this. And, in fact, there's a video, I think, on YouTube or on somewhere where you can see the audience raising their hands when he asks the question. So it's not a scientific study.
Right.
But it's so overwhelming that most everybody in the world, at least those that attend conferences, is in agreement that we're in our adolescence.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of comparisons that I make to the adolescent in going through that phase, because even though I've got a lot of years on me, I still remember adolescence.
That's right.
It's a very difficult time.
It is.
And so as the adolescent goes into adulthood, there's a lot of things they want about being adult, but there's a lot of things they want to stay as a child.
Right. You know,
they don't want to be responsible for themselves, but they want the goodies.
Right.
They want to be able to stay out late, but they don't want to clean their room, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, referencing America specifically, we're probably the leading adolescent. We're probably the richest adolescent in the world, and have the most toys.
Uh-huh.
But we're the most pesky.
Yes.
As they say about teenagers, pesky teenager.
Well,
so there's the process of growing up. And that's spiritually, that's emotionally, that's intellectually. I mean, we're not thinking very critically right now. We're thinking very short term. Our mindset of our culture is very short term. Not even looking at issues. I mean, now we're starting to look at sustainability, but we haven't been looking at it for a long time. But there's still this instant gratification culture, especially promoted by America in the American form of consumerism, and we're spreading that around the world.
Uh-huh.
So I prefer to paint the picture of what could be rather than what isn't. But I'm not running away from what isn't, because we have the things that are keeping us from seeing what's possible are our dysfunctions. And that's our proneness to addictions of all different kinds. And that immaturity. So in my new book, the two areas I'm focusing most on in terms of things working against evolving into a new level of human being are addictions and immaturity.
Yes, and that's a dangerous combination. That is a dangerous combination. And having been a mother of my own children and supported about 12 foster children, when you're speaking about the teen years, and I love the way you're framing this, John, of looking at what this is, and having raised and participated and been guided by many teens, the part that I feel is so incredible is that fine line of choice, because there's that burst of energy that comes forth in the teenager where all they want to do is be involved in action and be involved in change and be involved with their peers. And so there's this sense of the rules don't apply to me and I'm immortal.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this incredible charge of life at probably one of the highest levels of passion and belief in being able to really make things different. And as you're reflecting for us, when that passion hits, the ordinary things of cleaning your room and being accountable for what you say you're going to do, those just disappear. And with your referencing that, your experience now throughout the world in the straw poll that you're talking about, we truly are, if we are in the adolescent period of evolving, this is so perfect for a paradigm shift, because the power has reached a peak and so has the potential. Now, that's also one of the most critical times of choice, because the tipping point for that power to be used for life and for aliveness or for destruction is equally balanced and equally powerful at that time. So your work, John, in what you're doing with the leadership paradigm, and for all ages, because it isn't just a chronological age.
No.
It's all ages. So
no. Many young people who are old souls who
yes.
have the wisdom of people twice and three times their age. I don't just as many people that are mature citizens close to collecting Social Security that are still teenagers
uh-huh.
in their emotional bodies. Yeah, and one of the factors that you just reminded me of is if you take the cocktail of adolescence, addictions, and technology that speeds things up so they happen faster and faster, that's lethal.
It truly is.
I mean, it can be lethal. Excuse me. It isn't lethal. It can be lethal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you work on the technology's not going to stop. And with technology doesn't have a soul. You know, it just does what it does, and it keeps things going faster and faster. So every little thing we do to improve things will improve faster, and everything little thing we do to hurt things will hurt things faster.
Uh-huh.
We're just doing it faster and faster. So whatever it is, that can actually be an asset for a paradigm shift if it's properly directed. The question is where is it directed?
And, John, I think that's so important what you're saying is the feedback system that can happen now because technology is present. When I lived on Kauai and I was involved in the hurricane, September 11th, 1992, now on that isolated landmass with 51,000 people, the feedback system was very quick. With or without electricity, this is going to work for recovery, this isn't going to work for recovery. And I think what you're saying has embedded in my awareness that, oh my goodness, technology is our feedback system that literally is instantaneous. So it's like course correction through this paradigm shift. If we're paying attention, we can all know how to manage our own choices, because that's the key, is how we use this mechanism called technology. And the Dalai Lama said in this millennium, he said, we have to have a spiritual revolution
mm-hmm.
because the paradigm that held our consciousness through religion has been penetrated by science, which creates our technology, which comes through our conscious choices. So this field now where we have enough addiction, we have enough chaos, we have enough technology, it sounds like we have the prime conditions for the birth of the paradigm, don't you think, John?
I know we have the conditions to completely transform the world. I don't mean we change the world, but for the world to change. The conditions are there. There's no resources that we're lacking. This is basically what my whole new book is about, is that we have everything we need externally to make the shift, if we want to make the shift.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, do we want to?
Well,
is there enough desire
to
do it? And part of what I see my work to be is to keep informing and writing and learning myself so I can, you know, recycle it through and be as informative and inspiring as I can about what is possible. Because I think most people, when they see that there is a possibility, are willing to do something.
I think so.
Where a lot of people are, the vast majority of people, are either so busy just staying alive and surviving, and I'm talking about what they used to call third world.
Right.
Or a lot of people that are just working so hard here in the United States that they don't have time to even think about this sort
right.
of thing. But those that have the time and have the freedom to do that, they would be doing something if they thought there was something that could be done. But I think what I find a lot is there's a lot of hopelessness out there.
I think that's true, John. And when you were saying before about, you know, the shift in consciousness and the desire to hear things differently and to feel that there are things differently. And I think that a lot of the despair is people feel so small in a world that has such big problems, and their heart has a deep desire for change and for them to make a difference, but they don't have a clue how or what to do. And that leads to despair.
I challenge that publicly.
Good.
I don't mean I'm challenging you, but I get that a lot. Well, what do we do? What do we do?
Exactly.
And I say people do know what to do if they thought it was possible that it would make any difference.
So give us some ideas of what the people are talking about.
I do not have to come up with a formula for how to transform the energy system or the tidal system or the weather system or the business system or the educational system or the legal system. Granted, they all need help. But I'm not going to be, I don't have enough smarts to know all those things. But the people working in those industries do. And I contend that people that are working in systems that are dysfunctional know they're dysfunctional and know what they can do to change them.
Uh-huh.
But they don't think it'll make any difference. So when you have, but the other thing is people feel very isolated.
Yes.
So in feeling isolated, they don't dare bring up, you know, what we're doing over here is exactly the opposite of what we should be doing every week. We should have this value, not that value. We should be turning the knob this way, not that way.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else is turning it the other way, so I guess I'll go along with it.
So we're talking leadership, aren't we, John?
We're talking leadership. We're right back to that again.
Yeah, we're talking.
So this is the
leaders.
Time, and when I started the New Leaders newsletter back in 1990, I called it the New Leaders because I meant a different kind of leadership.
Right.
And it was a lame word. Now I look back at it. New means, I mean, it could be anything. New leadership could be Osama bin Laden. New leadership could be Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
It's new. It's different.
Right.
So conscious leadership is the best I've come up with lately in terms of writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of being, standing up for what you see needs to be done at any time, whether you're in a position to, you have the authority, quote, or the position or the title of leader. In other words, it's time for us all to be leaders where we need to lead, because each of us sees what has to be done in a different way.
Uh-huh.
The Wisdom of Crowds book was one of my favorite books, and it shows that a whole group of diverse people acting in unison together, not in unison, not like in lockstep, but acting as a whole of all those different diverse opinions will invariably come up with the best answer.
Uh-huh.
Even though they don't, the panel of experts is not the best way to solve the problem.
Exactly.
And so we all have the ability to see a different facet of everything and to see what needs to be done from that. We're all experts in something different.
And, John, you know, what you're saying reminds me of the 100th monkey principle, that when we're looking at conscious evolution, it's a process that takes place within the hearts and minds and bodies and lives of each individual. And that vibration from each one of us influences the collective field.
Mm-hmm.
And technology is like a mirror and giving us the opportunity to visually and consciously recognize what's moving. Well, what's moving on technology has already been moved through creation and generation within the individuals who are participating. So I think there's that place that you're referring to, John, also of really knowing that what makes a difference is the way I think and the way I act and how I choose to demonstrate on this planet, even if I feel odd man out, black sheep, or isolated. There's an accountability for absolutely living our day in the context that makes our heart feel at peace at night, and that we know in that day we have at least contributed what we could. The most important thing is authenticity, and to be an authentic person with our words, with our thoughts, with our actions, at the best of our human ability. So So yeah. I think it's a huge thing that you're referring to here, John, that personal accountability is more valuable than most of us realize in consciousness change.
There's a great quote by Howard Thurman it's become one of my favorites, and because I ended up finding out a whole lot about this man, so it's really affected my life. This one quote: "It's do not do what the world needs. Do not do what you think the world needs. Do what makes you come alive.
Mm-hmm.
What the world needs is people who come alive."
Oh my God, that is so real.
And you know, we got 6.5 billion souls in this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Each one is unique. I mean, how great a miracle is that? 6.5 billion people and no two exactly the same.
Phenomenal, isn't it?
And yet, many of us in the industrialized countries, in America and in the West, so to speak, try so hard to be like everybody else.
I know.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And the amount of blame and judgment and projection and criticism, if we don't fit into what you were referring to in the very beginning of the show, John, the herd consciousness.
And I don't even know, Kay, if it is the judgment and I think it's more the fear of being judged, the fear of acting differently, than it is, in fact, the reality that people are going to say, point to you and ridicule you. I think it's the fear of being ridiculed that is driving it, not necessarily the reality of it. It's the imagined fear more so than the real fear.
Well, and I think it is imagined, and I think it's generated by what I see in our media in America. It's like the minute that anyone begins to be, quote, outstanding in some version, whether it's in the entertainment world or the political field or the social world, that pretty soon some aspect of the media in America starts saying, well, what about this? And did you know this? And da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
So there's this reminder from the media that, oh, you want to raise your head out of the crab bucket? Well, guess what? Then we're going to go after you. And it's that exact thing you're talking about, John, is there's a perceived fear of this. And then we have the media to remind us that, wow, if we become a leader, if we step outside of the march, then I too could be exposed to that. So I think there's these subtle ways that we're being held through our own perceived fears and then the generalization that goes on with the media. And it creates what I consider a stagnant field in consciousness. And that, we know there is no such thing in energy. Energy is designed to move, and any form of stagnation, whether real or perceived, will cause explosions.
The issue I would take issue with what you just said is that people are being held. I know that's very popular these days, is to rag on the media because they're in a high profile position to be criticized, and God knows that system is out of whack as our healthcare system and our legal system. All our systems are just
in transition,
completely dysfunctional, and in many cases creating exactly the opposite of what they were intended to create. But the people allow the media to be the media. The people allow the justice system to be the way the justice system is. It's like people have abdicated their power, forgetting that they are where the power is. So they say, oh, it's the corporations, or it's big business, or isn't that. You can look at it from that point of view, but most of the value of a stock in a corporation is goodwill and reputation. And who's the holder of the power of what that is? It's the people. If everybody decided that if Ford made bad cars and unsafe cars and was all the negative things you can say about Ford, and that went around, Ford sales would drop like a rock. Stock would plummet. So who has the power? You know,
so we're back to the leadership principle, aren't we, John? It's like, where is the voice within each one of us to unite with each other?
And we're all walking around muffled.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you think that happened, John, and what do you think we can do to get our voice back?
Well, it's there. It's not. You don't have to get it back. You don't have to go anywhere to get it. It's there. It's just either get mad enough or get excited and passionate enough about something to start doing something about it, to reengage your heart and your soul and your get the juices flowing in yourself. Now, I do know some people that have talked to me, and one friend in particular, he's actually passed on now, but I remember him taking me to lunch, and he had this big thing he wanted to talk to me about, and I just knew it was big. I didn't know what it was, and he finally came out with a question. He says, John, you have so much passion for what you do. How do you find that passion?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, why are you asking? He says, well, he was successful. He was a very... had been in business for a long time, then he was consulting, he was very successful, but he just didn't have any excitement about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked a bit, and I finally recognized that he was taking antidepressants. Well, if you take a chemical to
right.
limit your lows, you're going to limit your highs.
Exactly.
So that's one way of not being passionately engaged in the world, or not coming fully alive.
Uh-huh.
Another one is just to be so busy, which is an addiction, but so busy that you're so distracted from what really enlivens you with your mental activity and worry and all that kind of stuff, that saps it all out of you.
Uh-huh.
But that's just, now you're doing it, you're also doing it to yourself. You're just taking a drug of a different kind.
Right.
And then there's people that go around angry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times when people say, oh, I don't know what my passion is, I said, well, if you really can't find what your passion is, if you really have no sense of it, then look for what really, really pisses you off.
Uh-huh.
What's going on in the world that really gets your goat?
Mm-hmm.
And then go do something about it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if you're going to try to fix something that's wrong or you feel like Charles Schwab did. You know, there's got to be a better way for the masses to buy stocks without paying huge commissions to stockbrokers.
Uh-huh.
And that was his passion. He got on that, and he like a pit bull on a stick, and wouldn't let it go. And despite his speech impediment and everything else, Charles Schwab has become a huge success.
Uh-huh.
Not because he was out to make millions and millions of dollars, but because he's really passionate about making this available to the public.
Uh-huh. So, John, I know from the years of knowing you that your passion is like a burning ember. It just sustains. It's amazing to me, John, how you just hold that passion and it has its bursts and its flames, but it just is so sustaining. And so would you tell us what you've noticed in your own life from this deep passion in you? How has it influenced people around you to either wake up, speak up, or support what you're doing?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one.
I know that's a lot of questions all in one
place.
Well,
first of all, I don't know... I don't know from people immediately around me most of the people I hang out with are doing similar kind of work.
Uh-huh.
They're authors or consultants.
Uh-huh.
So when we're together, it's usually like we're just comparing notes, things like that.
Uh-huh. Now, do you do that regularly, John, or is that intermittent?
I don't do it on purpose regularly, but things bring us together.
Okay. And is that like a smaller number of people?
Yeah, and it's smaller numbers in physically getting together
right.
here in the Bay Area,
right.
but also on the Internet.
Yes,
and
uh-huh.
through email.
Uh-huh.
And I'd say people that are trying to really make a difference in the systems and the consciousness of the world, God knows how many there are, but I must know three thousand of them.
Right.
So one of the things I love about this movement, and it doesn't have a name yet, but it is a movement, is that it's not going to come, there's no one person leading it.
Exactly.
I mean, there's hundreds of names that probably your listeners would know and you know, but none of us is like leading the way. There are
uh-huh.
people that have gotten had more success getting noticed than other people,
mm-hmm.
or their books had been a little more successful, or
mm-hmm.
something like that. But it's just a whole group of people working towards bringing the world into a more functioning, livening, spiritually fulfilling, sustainable world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, occasionally I do hear from people either in audiences that come to hear me or that send me a note. I'd say of every 10 or 15,000 copies of a book, I might get a note from somebody.
Uh-huh.
So it's amazing how few people actually reach out and try to contact the author.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally somebody walks up to me at a speech, and where most of the audience wouldn't have heard of me before, ever seen me before, some people walks up and says, I've been taking your newsletter for years, and I literally love it, and keep up the good work, and all
uh-huh.
that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
So it's nice to have a groupie every once in a while.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But it's not why I do this. It doesn't happen
no.
enough. And this is something I was talking about back in 1989, when I was working at the World Business Academy. The one role of leadership is the standing up for something that needs to be done, or something that you see as possible that isn't being birthed now, is not necessarily something we do because we're going to get applause for it.
Exactly.
It's not something we're going to do because we're going to get strokes for it. It's completely opposite of playing the corporate political game. It is doing it because you know inside of you that it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel the satisfaction inside. So all the acknowledgement has to come from within, of just knowing you're doing the right thing. And that's very self-fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not looking for fulfillment outside of ourselves. It's coming from within ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the key difference in really owning passion, is that it's such a deep, innate drive with such an enduring power that there is no stopping it. And so regardless of what it looks like the three-dimensional world is responding to or receiving, it's like that deep inner soul commitment, this is mine to deliver, this
is
mine to breathe out.
There is a stopping it, and that's what people are doing. That's maybe. I'm not saying this is, but maybe that's the biggest problem we have.
Well, and John,
people stopping themselves short of living their passions to the degree that, Kay, not only do they not know what they are when you ask them, they can't even find it anymore. They've got it so buried they can't even find it.
Well,
and some of us have more than one passion. It's
yeah,
okay to have
exactly.
multiple passions.
Right.
It's not like there's scarcity about a passion.
I think that what you're saying is so true, John, that we have covered up this innate power. And as a result, we have many conditions that display what happens when we attempt to stop an innate power in our own body, in our own life, or on this planet. Since energy is designed to move, whatever artificial or imposed human condition we place on that, whether it's Prozac or whether it's an academic belief or a political agenda, those are the places that absolutely will implode and influence our health and wellness, whether it's a system or an individual, or they will explode.
Yep.
Because energy has only one expression, and it is, and energy in motion is the true life. So the places where we've been overshadowed and the conditions that you're talking about, John, I think that's part of what's happening with the critical conditions right now in people's lives, is passion for this evolution. And the timing of it is innate. And each person is experiencing whatever is in the way or blocking them is decrystallizing or exploding. And so there's a lot of crisis and a lot of chaos on the planet right now. I consider that very healthy, because what you're saying, John, is so real. that if we get too buried, if we get too lost, if we feel too dead and we're still breathing, something's got to happen.
Yeah, I like what you said about trying to bottle it up, because energy does find ways to express itself and to flow.
Yes, it does.
And so if you bottle up your enthusiasm and you bottle up your passion and keep it suppressed, most likely you're going to develop some kind of sickness.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to the day when the cancer researchers finally get that.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Years ago, Symington.
Yes.
Had his finger on that 25 years ago, but
exactly.
It still hasn't reached the mainstream. They're still looking for the mechanical cure.
Well, and I love the book that Bruce Lipton has written, The Biology of Belief. It's a brilliant book, referring exactly to what you're saying, John, about scientifically the awareness that is held of how strong the environment influences the cellular membrane of our 50 to 70 trillion cells in our physical body. And so what you're saying is the importance of the environment that we choose. And when you were referencing that somehow, even if it's through serendipity, you have some connection with like-minded people, and you get to interface and get to regenerate and get to brainstorm. I think that's a really important piece right now also, John, in what we're talking about, the new paradigm in leadership, is to remember to have a circle around us of like-minded people where we can keep stretching our possibilities. By each person has something to offer, and also to feel safe, you know, to have a circle where you can really expand thinking because you feel safe to talk about your deep visions or the emerging visions. Do you find that with your people when you gather, John?
I noticed that most of the people that I hang out with are pretty much like me, where they aren't as concerned about being safe because they are publicly already a revolutionary.
Exactly.
Like I'm sitting here saying this stuff to you. That's not very, you know, I don't know who's listening. So I don't have a very high safe threshold. My job to me, as far as I see it, my job is to say things people wouldn't say out loud.
And see, I consider you a practiced leader, John. And so as we're talking about leadership, for those who are on the edge of wanting to come out and let their words be known, I think that you are a practiced leader and you have ideas. And so I want the people to recognize the value of your years of experience. So I want to make sure that they know, here's some contact information. Now, if you're a leader, and you know you're a leader, no one has to tell you. If you know you're a leader and you need some resourcing, then I want you to know that John is available. John's been doing this for years. So here's some ways to contact John. Phone number, 415-437-6874. Email contact.
6374.
6374. Oh, thank you so much. Email contact, john@renesch, and that's RENESCH.com. Check out his website, which is www.renesch.com. RENESCH.com. And then check out the new book, John's latest book, Getting to the Better Future, A Matter of Conscious Choosing. That is www.globaldialogue.com/John Renesch/. That's the blog, and then you also have a site just for the book, don't you, John?
Yes, and it's just www.gettingtothebetterfuture.com.
So you have all of these ways, and I'm really imploring you, if you're standing on the edge of your own passion, standing on the edge of your desire, your deep, heartfelt desire to make a difference, we are not alone. We are a community in our own body of trillions of cells. So reach out, and reach out to people that you have a sense of integrity. There's lots of people you can reach out and talk to that might not be clear, and I am telling you, John is a very solid, clear resource. So please make yourself available to this support if you have an interest in some of the topics that John's working with, and if you just have an interest in expanding your leadership, because the qualities of leadership, regardless of what your venue is, the qualities of leadership are a foundational base, and John can be so helpful with that. Now, what's next for John is what I'm wondering. What's happening for you now, and what's happening in your outreach?
Well, I've written my first novel.
Oh, great.
And I am in the process of trying to locate a publisher or an agent who will locate a publisher for that. The title, until a publisher gets a hold of it anyway, the title is The Choice. And it's the story of a very successful businessman who has everything, you know, everything going for him, everything you could possibly want, love, money, respect, all that. And then something happens, and he has this spiritual transformation. And after this, he then looks at the work he was doing and says, you know, and he started this company, and he says, I'm feeling conflicted between what I know now and what I'm doing. So he goes into changing his company.
Wow, that's exciting. And I know that right now, because one of the addictions that can be used in a very healthy way is this addiction to entertainment. And that there's huge, huge numbers of people that are entertained through reading, and the transformation, as we've seen with the Da Vinci Code, you know, just was so explosive that people are seeking, and this is delightful, John. So do keep us posted, and you'll have that up on your website and all of that.
Well, when it gets published, yeah.
Well,
definitely. And then I'm getting close to being done with my next nonfiction work, which is probably the most important book I've ever written. The working title for that is The New Human, Beyond the Naked Ape.
Wow, that's,
and that's
very
the book that,
beautiful.
Where I'm basically pointing to, I'm making as strong a case as I can for the fact that this is the time for us to start waking up.
Yes.
And it's all possible. It's just a question of our will.
Yes.
Our desire.
Well, and I can, you know, from my 35 years of working with astrology, I am truly, truly, John, so excited and so grateful that this moment of transformation and change on this planet is here now, and I'm here now, you're here now.
Isn't that exciting?
It's so incredible, John. We've, in all of our whole entire life, there's never been a moment so precious and so expansive. So the universe is truly our greatest support. If we ride the tide of the universe and allow our passion, which is our own expression of that tide, to guide us, it's a win-win for everyone.
Absolutely. Second that.
Well, John, I'm so appreciative of your taking your time to be here with us and all of the wonderful, wonderful things you're doing. And please do stay in touch with me, and at any time that we can chat on the air together and share your visions and your new awarenesses with this lovely audience, please contact me. We'll do more.
Great. I look forward to it. Thank you for all the kind words this morning.
Well, and thank you for your devotion and your work and your wonderful, wonderful contributions.
Great, great. Thank you.
So I thank you very much for, beloved audience, for your participation and all of the things that you are doing in your personal life. And as John mentioned earlier, you know, when you live through your passion, it's not about how many people know your name. It's not about how much recognition do you get, but it's about how much aliveness do you have, because today you delivered you. And no one else can do that, because there's only one of you. There's only one person on this planet who owns those incredible fingerprints, who has your DNA. So your measurement for your success is not outside of you. It's not your bank account. It's not the size of your house. How new is your car? And it's not a position that some entity gives you. But it's you, your breath, and your passion. And when you get ready to close your eyes at night, can you just rest in that peace in your heart and know that today was a good day? I delivered me as 100% as I could. So I'm saying to you, Anu Ai Ko Ala Hele, blessings on your journey. Ahui ho, until we meet again. Aloha.